Welcome to the Thiefman Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome. It's Tuesday night, and we are the Scene Snobs. I'm Mick Manhattan, of course, joined, as always, by my partner on this magic carpet ride, Casey the Madman Plotz.
That's me. I wound up here. Somehow, magically, I am in the homestead. It's wonderful and delightful. I am so excited to see you, my friend. How are you on this fine evening?
I'm doing all right. Riding a bit of a high. I guess we can kind of let the cat out of the bag now, sort of promote for it and such. So we sat down with a hero of ours from our childhood.
I mean, that's not putting it mildly. I'd say that's pretty spot on.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I feel like he was everybody's big brother. And now
he was like the younger uncle.
Okay, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, for me.
That's fair. That's very fair. I you know what? It was anyway, so everybody hears it and knows it or sees this later. Commander William T. Riker.
Captain.
Well. I mean, most people remember from Next Gen. Calm down. Commander.
Right, fair enough. I'm just saying, well, just technically now he's been promoted several times.
Very true. He is a captain as of now on Picard. But yeah, we got to sit down with Jonathan Frakes, talked to him about his very storied career, got really into Star Trek. He was super excited about the name of our new show, which you guys make sure you check it out. It's a Patreon exclusive show. It's Warp Factor Fiction, a chronological analysis of the history of the Star Trek on screen. Hopefully you guys can join in. If you want, go check out the tiers that are available for it. Watch the show. Let us know what you think. Let's talk Trek. Now, the Jonathan Frakes interview will come out with episode 2 next week of Warp Factor Fiction, but it will be available on YouTube a little bit later down the line. So make sure to look out for it. But we actually have some special guests joining us tonight.
Very excited this evening.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to Kevin and Aaron from the podcast That Wouldn't Die. And I don't want to say the podcast again because it seems like it works. I don't want to make it lose its all its meaning.
Just a word you repeat over and over again until it no longer exists. Yeah,
that's right. And we got some fun topics for you tonight. We're going to talk about with Kevin and Aaron, we're going to sit down. We're going to talk about song and scene combos. Now, you guys really sounded off on our social media when we posted the videos on this. And I love what you guys were saying. We're going to talk about some of our favorites. And I don't want to give any away right now.
There are so many.
Yeah,
there's so many. Sure.
But we are excited for you guys to check it out. And we want to thank you guys again for watching, whether you be watching live on Patreon or watching on YouTube afterwards or listening later on the podcast platforms.
Anywhere you happen to listen, perhaps on Apple or Spotify or whatever other major podcast listener you're listening to, maybe Good Pods, wherever you are, remember to rate and review. We appreciate the support.
Yeah, absolutely. We really do. And it's always a lot of fun to be able to sit down and talk to new people. So I am excited that Kevin and Aaron are going to join us. We're going to bring them on in just a few. Hey, Casey, how was your day?
Mick, we interviewed Jonathan Frakes.
You've been waiting for that. You've been waiting to blow up on that.
What? Like, I've been holding everything in as much as I possibly can for days. Yep. I've been keeping a lid on all of this. I've been so excited. I have been gushing at the seams, just completely exploding with just wonder and amusement. The fact that we got to interview someone who I grew up fighting to watch a television show with this man on. Yep. I took some bruises, man. Like, the little sister knew how to kick and punch real good. She has some strong combos. So
was she busy at 7 p.m. on Saturday nights in the 80s? Tell her to knock it off.
Yeah, it was punch me in the face. That's what she was doing. She was fair. Before bed. It didn't matter. She had to go to bed. Didn't care. Still, why not? It was a worthy fight.
I love it. So doing that, I know you're super excited. Yes. Get pumped up for it. I'm going to edit it. We're going to put it out. Like I said, we're going to put it out next week. We'll get into all that. But without giving anything away or the questions, because I want them to watch the interview.
Of course.
What was a big takeaway you had talking to him today?
You know what? One of the best takeaways I got from that conversation was the way he truly loves what he does. He loves every portion of the craft. And he has invested so much of himself into every piece of it that you really hear the care he takes as he does each part. And everything he does means something. And he holds it in high regard. It's fantastic. It was really great to see that.
Yeah, really does. And I, you know what? One of the big takeaways for me listening to him talk is that he gets it. Like you're saying, like he just knows like what his fan base is, what they love, what they want to talk about. And it's not that he talks about it because he likes the fans. He's genuinely into it too. He loves this stuff. And yeah. He gave us a lot of stuff, and it wasn't just on Star Trek. We talked about Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction. We talked about his entire directing career and so much more. So make sure you guys tune in for that.
That's very gracious individual and very grateful to have that time with him.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we got these guests here, and I feel like we need to talk to them. I mean, we invited them on, and I cannot wait to hear what their list is.
Don't want
to
be rude. We're almost 6 minutes in, my friend. It's like, you know, keeping people in the back. Now, we do have wonderful places for them to you know, dine. We have all sorts of catered craft tables in our green room. So
yeah, we were all like tons of bougie over here.
Oh, yeah. High rollers, I believe they call them.
Well, let's bring them on from the podcast that wouldn't die. And I'm not saying it again. We have Kevin and Aaron. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining.
So, guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate you. So before we start getting started, would you tell us a little bit about yourselves and the podcast that you guys produce?
We are the podcast that wouldn't die. We discuss horror and sci-fi, guilty pleasures, and forgotten classics of, the present, the past. The future? Who's to say? With a comedic twist. Yes. With the future, exactly.
So what's something, like you talk horror and sci-fi. Tell us some of your favorite movies and why. Like, were they something that, you know, from younger years, like it just kind of nostalgic brought up or, you know, stuff like that?
I know most of my favorite choices are from the 80s. From my youth, we talked recently about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yes.
Which, so. if you've not seen it lately, I highly recommend checking it out. It's dynamite.
Very true.
It is bonkers and off the wall and hilarious, and I love it.
Kevin always chooses like wacky camp 80s films, and I try to press him for like the Rosemary's Babies, the kind of Shinings, the true classics.
You're trying to press me. Like, what am I refusing?
I'm dragging you along.
Bring him into the higher tiers. Yes, absolutely. As someone who has House a poster, like, I'm with you, buddy.
Absolutely. We love House. Well, I love House. Aaron,
fantastic.
It was terrible. That was recommended by somebody I work with. I'm like, now I view them in a different light now.
Oh, in very different light. Yeah, it's
now I view him in a different light
now. But true.
It has a great poster, though. You got to give it that.
It is right.
Yeah, that's
a
legit.
Finger on a doorbell. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, more recently, what are some on some of your episodes, some of the movies that you've been covering, and kind of where do your topics go on your show?
Let's see. Last week we did the entire Friday the 13th franchise. Wow. So, ooh la la. Then we did The Ring before that. Next week we've got The Mist coming out. We're pretty much down for anything, though, truly.
Nice.
We have lists. And then if anyone says, hey, why don't you do this one? We're always up for it.
Nice.
That's how we did Cannibal Holocaust. Somebody recommended that, I'm sure.
What a terrible choice.
Recommend that.
How was that one? I know how that one was, but I want to know what you think of that one.
Rough sledding? I guess is the best way to
say it. Honestly, it's kind of slow, but it's great to say Cannibal Holocaust. I mean, yeah, the name sells it all right there.
Exactly.
That's the best part.
Pretty sure you can get away with the Spark Notes version on that one. You don't need to actually watch it. It's
like Faces of Death. If it was just like random animals and turtles and things.
Exactly.
Cannibalism?
There's some. Cannibalism.
Cannibalism.
So guys, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And we've been kicking around the idea of talking about you know, songs and scenes and movies together and just how they work. We know so many beautiful, beautiful combinations. One of my favorites is to talk about is the Warriors at the end when they're walking on the beach and she plays In the City. It resonates perfectly. And I feel like it encapsulates the entire story of that journey. Tell us some.
All right.
So that's kind of like where we're going with it. Like, Casey, what is one that you really like? Let's kick this off.
Okay, yeah, to fire off, I'm going to go with one of my all-time favorites, an absolute standard, and a need
dance
in my world is absolutely Peter Gabriel in Say Anything. That moment when Lloyd Dobler holds up that boombox, all you want to hear is In Your Eyes, and it touches my soul.
I knew going on a podcast with a bunch of guys, that was going to be referenced. 100%.
Absolutely.
That's now, a classic.
But it was terrible advice.
So many guys want that as their weddings. Oh, my God.
Terrible
advice.
How do you dance to that? Incredibly toxic. Bad choice all around. Like, rewatching that movie as an older man now, I'm like, oh, you don't do that. That's not how you know.
So, Casey, you have a daughter, so I need to ask you from that perspective, how would you feel about a guy standing outside her window with the boombox?
He wouldn't be out there long. Roman candles are effective.
That's right. Straight up stalkerism. That wouldn't go over well, and it wouldn't go over well here in Bakersfield. Yeah. Everyone's heavily armed. Shot. Heavily armed in here in Bakersfield.
Fair. Don't wake me up on a Saturday morning.
Get off my lawn!
Yes! You so, get it.
Yeah. So, Aaron, what's give us an idea of one, and let's start talking about it. Let's maybe some more.
The first one that popped into my mind was Rocky Mountain High from Final Destination, and yes! All I kept thinking is, this is all these kids are going to remember who John Denver is. But it was classic. You knew shit was going down whenever you hear a little guitar.
It is he so died true. Right before that movie came out. That's inappropriate.
It killed him. He knew what was going to happen.
He died Final Destination himself.
Right.
What's his Final Destination?
Plane crash. Very upset.
Oh, my God. You know, that is a great, because they play that as almost a hook to say, okay, the plane's, you know, kind of a hint that the plane's going down, right?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen Final Destination.
Yeah, he should have definitely, you know. Exactly. He should have stuck to his country roads.
Take me home is what they were yelling.
The Western Virginia song, as we call it here in Virginia.
Yeah, exactly, because it's not West Virginia, it's Western Virginia.
All that stuff exists here, John Denver. Where were you?
He was high.
True. He was high. Fair. Well, they said at one point it was going to be Take Me Home, Country Roads, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, then that would have been interesting.
Well, he was wishy-washy on what he really loved. He was.
Was home Fenway Park? That's so, you know, there's some big ones out there, of course.
Well, Eric, what do you got? What's one of yours?
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to.
Let's see. I just dropped my list. My Hip to Be Square in Psycho.
American Psycho.
I'm losing my mind.
Come on,
American Psycho, where he's literally selling the album, Hip to Be Square, while, like 5 seconds before he kills somebody. Dynamite.
Dude.
I fucking love that movie. I love that movie. And it's all in the book, too, which I don't love as much. That's quite horrific. But that whole dialogue, I thought, well, they just did that for the movie. Nope. It's all in the book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is a very odd book. It just starts, it takes off in chapters on just talking about music for many pages. And you're just like, what am I stepping into here? And then when you get to it, and it's like, oh, God.
And then cannibalism.
Like, oh, shit.
Perfect. Yeah. Cannibals.
Gotta love the cannibalism. I see a theme going here. I see what you're doing.
Bone Tomahawk's the next one.
Oh, God.
So, what's your favorite cannibal movie? So, guys, with that, like, let's talk about what is the power of the music that comes in? Do you think that that song in particular, when you watch a movie, when they were choosing it? I want to think about it from this perspective. If they had chosen another song that was maybe similar in tone and such, do you think it would have done that well, the scenes or something? Like Karate Kid, You're the Best Around, if they did something a little different.
That's a hard one. I mean, hard. Yeah.
Do you know any songs that, in your opinions, in movie scenes, you couldn't do without? Like, that's the song. That's it.
I mean, I going with my pick was such a strange choice. That's why I appreciated it. It was just so strange. I mean, I guess it could have been Lady in Red or something, but I don't know. It was John Denver.
No, not the Chris DeBarge classic.
It is a classic. I like when they juxtapose a scene with a song that doesn't seem appropriate for it. Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's the An American Werewolf in London, where he's literally transforming for the first time, playing the melodic tones of Sam Cooke in the background singing Blue Moon. Now, granted, there's a moon connection, but I love it. I like that.
Oh, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Agreed. Absolutely.
To me, that's the only good scene in that movie. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Came hard.
I'm not a huge fan, but it is a good movie. I just kidding.
Going weapons hot.
Right? Good night. Okay, well, like in The Breakfast Club, I don't know if you get anything else other than Don't You Forget About Me. I think that's perfect. The Simple Minds, I don't see another song coming into that scene, that impact it has, and not to mention the very message of don't forget about me, friends that were not really friends.
Plus, it's so burned into your brain, it's hard to think of another song that would have worked just as well.
That was on my list.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I will say two filmmakers that I feel like are great at picking music for different scenes, and most of their films are filled with it, are Cameron Crowe. And the other one was just on the tip of my tongue, and now I'm
Anderson.
Anderson's good, but this one was Tarantino? More
Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann, he gets the right people to come in and make that music.
Yep,
like what he did with Elvis, and just kind of I forget the singer's name that he brought in, but she was just playing, she was singing Hound Dog, and like her version of it for that scene was fantastic. He knows music so well, it's amazing. But Cameron Crowe is definitely one of them, for sure. I will think of the other one. But what do you guys think? Directors that have good music and choices in their movies?
Well, Wes Anderson, because it's always Mark, what is it, Mother's Ball from Devo? All his stuff is beautiful. It's fantastic. It is. I got a couple on my list.
Nice.
I said earlier, Tarantino, all of his scenes have music like that. I think he read somewhere that he had like, in his mind, the vision of the scene with this music before he ever, like, as he's writing the script. I like James Gunn, especially in those Guardians of the Galaxy movies. I mean, he's throwing a no-hitter.
Yeah, you're like, damn, I haven't heard that song in a while.
Right? They're just so good. Who thought Blue Suede would be making a comeback, huh?
I know!
Strong.
Yeah, big one for me that I really enjoyed, the movie Elizabethtown. He set that to such beautiful music, and even the final road trip that he goes on, that it's road trip music that he's putting together, and he's pulling out the CDs as he goes, but every song just hits in every point that he's at. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I think Zach Braff is another one who, you know, who came through really strong with his soundtracks are fantastic.
So, like Garden State, for example. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, and The Last Kiss. It was wonderful. A lot of repeat musicians too. Big Snow Patrol fan.
he likes the Snow Patrol. So now, what do you think are some powerful songs that really made a scene? It's almost all song. Like I think Flashdance has that one.
Rainbow Connection, the Muppet movie.
Yes,
I still cry about that song.
Amazing. I know it makes me a little weepy.
Henson could not sing, and I still love that song.
Somebody played that on TikTok the other day as I was scrolling through, and it just started, and I was like, nope, not getting into this one.
Let's do it.
That aerial shot, I'm like, nah, I don't need to be in the swamp today.
The swamp. I have to pull the car over.
So what? Casey,
I have to say this.
Go ahead.
I was watching a movie recently, and it drew me back to where I was back in 85, and it's View to a Kill, but it's not the song you're thinking of. There is a scene when Roger Moore, 75 years old, creates snowboarding. Okay. The Russians are after him. They've blown up his snowmobile, and he takes the ski, starts skiing to the Muzak version, evidently, of California Girls. And it wasn't the Beach Boys, wasn't even David Lee Roth. It was, I don't know, the house band. But it was, it still touches me right here. That's all I can say.
So someone who probably did some John Holmes movies as well, soundtracking back in the day. So yeah.
You may be right. Multi-talented.
Yeah, for sure.
We call that Velvet Lounge.
I'll tell you, when the soundtrack for Drive came out, and you watch that movie and you just see them looking around Los Angeles and just all those different views, crystal clear views of them, and they're playing Nightcrawl at the beginning. Oh, it hits you so hard. It's such a great piece.
You know, a really fun one that was used in a silly movie was Dazed and Confused with Sweet Emotion. As they're pulling up with that slow roll coming up with that Aerosmith track, just slow burning as they get into the parking lot. I'm like, God, that must have been awesome.
their whole soundtrack was just.
Oh, yeah. It was married. It was integrated. It was all part of the storytelling, was the music. And it was wonderful.
Yeah, that hot summer night they were pulling off, it was just perfect.
Well, it's like, I love those period pieces of the 70s and 80s where they just inundate it with the songs that I love.
No question. Boogie Nights.
Perfect.
Boogie Nights. That's one on my list. Sister Christian.
Yes. Oh, yes. Night Ranger all day.
That was on my list too.
And that was one of the most tense things in the whole movie. It was like, oh shit, it's all going to go bad.
Yes. God.
And Jesse's Girl's in that too, that moment.
Yep. Good old Rick Springfield. Who doesn't love, you know, the doctor from General Hospital?
Dr. Noah Drake.
God. Yeah, exact bingo.
Dr. Noah Drake.
Oh, gosh. Kevin hit me with a get it right.
That's right.
You know what's one that I'm surprised hasn't been mentioned, considering we're all horror fans here, is any Goblin song in like a Deep Red or Suspiria or anything like that.
Absolutely. I was at a music festival that had a record store in it, and there was a Goblin album, but it was 100 degrees. I'm like, I'm not carrying this fucking thing around for the rest of the festival. So it had to go back. But yeah, a little Goblin.
You got it.
I saw him once. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was in Italy, and he did this thing for Dario Argento. So he did a live concert before Argento got this award. It was really
that's
cool.
Amazing.
That's a keeper, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is badass.
You know, a good song that was used in a movie that I think it was written for the movie and performed for the movie was Eddie and the Cruisers.
I remember that movie. That was good.
That hit right. And for that song to actually get famous off of the movie.
Right.
You know, and be, you know, connected to that in such a big way. Was it
The Dark Side?
The dark side.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just waiting for the dark side.
It's such a good one.
that had a radio play. I remember that back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
How do you feel through that band? And you're like, no, we're not any of the Cruisers. We're a real band.
Yeah, right?
Whoops.
Oh, that's it.
Not anymore.
Whoopsie. Play that Eddie and the Cruisers song.
I was thinking about the opening montage of Rocky III, where they kick right in. And it's literally like, oh, we now know what Rocky should be, where it's just fun. There's Mr. T's there. We've got Hulk Hogan showing up. It's not like long scenes at the pet shop with Adrian anymore. You know, yeah,
it's funny you mentioned that, Kevin, because my son he wanted to see Creed 3 and he had never seen any of the Rockies or Creed movies. And he's, you know, just turning 11. So I was like, all right, I think it's time. And we sat like for a few days and watched them all. So we watched the first one. He's like, it's good. It just seems kind of slow. I'm like, yeah. I mean, don't worry. Just keep going. We get to the second one. And it's almost a carbon copy. He's like, you know, again, it was good, but it's just really slow. I'm glad he won. And I was like, all right, 3, it gets weird. Get into it. Just enjoy it. And it's just like this from now on. And he didn't get it until he saw it. And he's like, yeah, you're right. It's very different.
Very different. Yeah.
Well, so it's Eye of the Tiger. It's Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. And I read somewhere that it was originally going to be You're the Best Around. And they wrote
Joe
it for
Bean
Rocky
Esposito, III. Man. He's showing yes. up everywhere.
And that's why if you listen to it, it says history repeats itself. But it's for Karate Kid. There is no history in the first Karate Kid.
Nope.
So they junked it and got brought in Eye of the Tiger, and the rest is history. Boom.
Wow. Well, and then obviously it was surpassed in number four with a much better all-around album because James Brown's Living in America just elevates everything.
That is true.
I thought you were really going to go with like the songs like Hearts on Fire. Or...
I love Hearts on Fire. I thought you were going for it first.
No, I use Hearts on Fire to actually prepare myself for like cross-country meets. But then we get to, you know, James Brown's Living in America. And if you're not dancing, you're failing in
life.
That's
true. I agree.
I like when you got to Rocky III and it automatically became, we have to have more than one montage in the movie. And he was just trying to say, and it was like Rocky III is like, we have two montages. And then Rocky IV is like, we're going to throw in three montages. And it's like, all right, calm down.
And then in Rocky V, they go to where there's a sad montage.
Oh.
But then Rocky V fails because there's only one.
No, you got to have multiple, training montages. Yeah, absolutely. It's Rocky. It's not Rocky without a montage or two.
Bingo.
What are some songs that really worked in horror movies? Knowing that you guys are such big fans, especially with the 80s movies, like there was so much.
There are a bunch. Tubular Bells, The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not like we were listening to that on the radio before that, you know. I have Blue Velvet. Are we calling Lynch horror?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's terrifying. Yeah.
There's an ear in the field. It's horror in my book.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I'm with it. If you have a psychopath breathing, what is it? The ether?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's so disturbing.
Right.
God bless Isabella Rossellini. Oh,
I don't know how she handled that. Good night.
She put up with a lot.
Yeah. She was having a relationship with David Lynch at the time.
You have to be able to commit to that level of what in the hellery? Like, what's happening here?
Well, she's having a relationship with Dennis Hopper in that scene, I'll tell you what.
Yikes!
She was having lots of relationships.
David, what should I do in this scene? Don't stop. What does that mean?
What are you going to
truly disturbing. But the power of the music, especially in horror movies, I mean, and we can go in to scores, the great... John Carpenter, his Halloween theme, and so much more. But for you, like we were talking about John Denver in Final Destination, what are some other songs that you've heard that really enhance the fear to the movie?
Crap, I don't have any on my list. I don't have any more.
Don't Fear the Reaper was in Halloween by Blue Oyster Cult.
That's a good one.
Did that enhance the horror, though? Who's to say? Yes.
It definitely, I think it added to the, this is not going to be a good night. like we were saying with John Denver in Final Destination. It's like, this is definitely a foreshadowing song for Annie.
Were there any snappy songs in the Babadook?
It's a kid screaming. Really,
any toe tappers that just had
any toe tappers? Annabelle's greatest hits.
Yeah, oh my God.
You know, it was that Conjuring. They just had to bring it back again. It was great.
That's funny. I'm trying. I mean,
For me,
you get a lot more scores, I think.
Yeah,
like
it's a lot of mood and stuff. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they're starting to do that more where there's the song that ends with it. And
yeah. I have Shaun of the Dead was Queen's Don't Stop Me Now.
That's definitely a good one.
What they were doing in that moment that I just thought was a hoot. So I love when they do that, when they have the silliness twist and kind of work into the, well, we're actively killing zombies and you can't stop. So
love Shaun of the Dead. We haven't done that one yet.
That's a good one.
And, next one.
The beginning is when they do White Lines. Mm-hmm. And they're singing that, and the zombies walking out. That's a good scene for that, too, with the music.
Curtis Blow, all over the place, crushing it.
So good. Thinking about that, let's think about some maybe some bad movies that had great songs come from them. Mm. Like maybe we saw some popularity in them. I'll go first. Anything in Greece. No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't usually get everybody riled, so I just throw it out there.
I love Grease, but now I've listened to it for 10,000 years. I'm a high school teacher. All the kids love Grease. I'm like, I'm going to kill myself.
How do you listen to Grease too?
Not that's Grease. Reproduction. It's very lesser quality.
Oh my God. What is the one she sings that for the guy on the bike, the motorcycle?
Oh, that's amazing.
My wife used to run around singing it all the time. It was like the song Michelle Pfeiffer sings for the dude on the bike.
Cool Rider.
Cool Rider.
I've seen this recently.
Oh, no. That's right.
Accidentally, I hope.
I was in college with a girl who told me it was her like the most perfect movie ever. And I had to report her to campus security. I
said, thank God.
You got to go.
Clearly
I hope she got help. I hope she's all right now.
Travolta would agree with you.
I hope so as well. Heavy medication.
One I really liked that came out of a horror movie, not a horror movie, but I came out of a movie and it like surpassed was, what's the name of the song? That was the one thing I was trying to think while we were doing it, but it was, it surpassed it. It was St. Elmo's Fire. I can't remember.
The, oh,
it
yeah. Man, oh, I can Man in Motion. New horizon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as it goes on, I think about that. I hear that on the radio still. Of course, the oldies channel. It kills me to say that. But I hear that still. And that movie, I don't feel like that kept going past. You know, like people watch it, and there are people who remember it. But I don't feel like that's one that's like, you should definitely see this. No,
most of the John Hughes movies
was so much better.
Agreed. Yeah. And most of the John Hughes movies, I don't think much of it lasted. I think there's a couple that stuck around. Pretty in Pink, I think, is okay. Breakfast Club still has some tread to it.
I think 16 Candles. Will
16 Candles is decent, but St. Elmo's Fire does not.
No, but that's Fire, a Brett Ellis. It's American Psycho author did that one.
Brett Easton Ellis. There you go. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it's St. Elmo's Fire is not a John Hughes movie, by the way.
Okay.
It's a false John Hughes movie. It was written by the guy who did the bad Batman movies. What was his name?
Joel Schumacher.
Oh, God.
I didn't know that. I knew he did.
Oh, I'm thinking of Less Than Zero. I'm sorry.
Less than Zero. I love Less Than Zero.
I was thinking of Less Than Zero. That's American Psycho.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this. So St. Elmo's Fire had that song, Man in Motion, but it also had a score that was really quite good. It's like, do, 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 do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a good song.
I don't know what that is. That Tubular Bells? I don't know
what
that is.
Tubular Bells! Absolutely.
I'm going to do
callback. Does like anybody else recognize what I'm saying? Or am I lost my mind?
No, I do. It was the sax.
Talking about?
Bob Lowe on sax? Yep. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I remember the sax. There was lots of sax in that movie. It was fantastic.
It was the time. Everybody had to have a sax player. There's the dude in the Lost Boys well oiled and playing the sax. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be a singer
and the sax player, by the way.
What was it about saxophones? Because I was watching that new Night Court reboot.
Yeah.
And watching that, they keep to the original theme. It's just updated a little bit, and there's no more sax. It's now like a synth guitar. Hmm. And I'm like, I get it. You should just kept the jazzy sax, but
yeah,
what's
because it was saxy.
Saxy.
Your puns are what are throwing me off tonight.
I tell my kids the problem with having a sax in your band is that every song has to have a sax solo then.
Otherwise, he's just sitting there smoking cigarettes.
Bingo. Being completely wasted.
Before you start a band,
getting a chunk of the royalties.
Oh, I love it.
I guess you can give him a tambourine every now and then.
Meanwhile, the trumpet guy is pissed because he's in every song. They're making the same money.
It's Earth, Wind, and Fire.
So I know you guys put together a short list for this. What are some of the ones on your list that really shine to you that you think people should, appreciate more?
All right. This one was made for the movie and I actually downloaded it and I just found out it was written by Beck. and it's Sex Bomb from Scott Pilgrim.
Nice.
Yes.
That's good awesome.
One. That really is one of the one. Best movies. I cannot recommend that movie enough.
And the music and sound in that.
Oh, the music is fantastic. The whole thing is, it's perfect. It's a perfect movie.
Yeah, Edgar Wright just crushes it. And really, the cast was phenomenal. Like, talk about where they are now. It's like, wow, what a hotbed of perfection. Yeah.
The evil. I mean, I wouldn't change one thing about it.
Nice. How about you, John? What you got? John, Kevin, sorry. I was thinking about Jonathan Frakes earlier.
We both just called you a long name today. I am so sorry.
We recorded last night, this morning, tonight, and now.
Dang.
No, what's funny is I heard you guys talking about Jonathan Frakes, and I was watching some early Next Generation where he's beardless.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere he grew the beard because, like me, he just doesn't want to shave his face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basically. I don't have like your truth, connection bro. To the beard. I just don't want to shave every day. So let me just have a beard. Kevin.
I'm wearing right.
Crushing it.
I almost told him that today.
This is 9 weeks, so I'm trying really hard.
Good heavens. I got more growth on my legs after 9 weeks. Come on. What's happening?
I just hit 40 and my hair went to my back. It just skipped this whole segment. It was like, nah, you don't need a hair. We're good.
Yeah, that's right. Migrating south.
Yeah.
It's very sad. There was a song that I wrote down. It's kind of the score, but I have it on my phone and I listen to it, so I appreciate it. The opening theme from Shaft, where he's a bad mother, where he's walking through town.
Shut your mouth.
He's absolutely with his turtleneck and his leather jacket doing his thing. I'm like, dynamite. Dynamite.
Gosh. Somehow you work Shaft into every conversation, Kevin.
As we all should.
Well, when Shaft is on the mind, one should speak of Shaft.
Which, with that, if you're such a fan of Shaft, what did you think about the most recent sort of sequel to it?
Well, let me say this. I've seen Shaft. I've seen Shaft's big score. I've seen Shaft in Africa. I've seen the big ones with Richard Roundtree. I saw the one, I think it was 2000 with Christian Bale and and obviously Samuel L. Jackson, and I didn't like it. I did not like it. So then,
okay.
I felt bit by that snake, so I didn't go back to Shaft the Next Generation with the whole family involved. Did you guys see it? I don't know.
Yeah, I saw it. It was actually, they brought back more comedy element to it, which I think works in today's world. You can't go back to what the black exploitation movies and other exploitation movies of the 70s do. Nobody would take it now. That's why they're such gems and wonderful. But this one, I think they realized, okay, it couldn't be the serious tone one with amazing actors. I mean, think about that cast. Toni Collette, Samuel Jackson, Jeffrey Wright, Christian Bale. All went on to be stars. And they, you know, they were so serious tone in that. I think they were like, no, we need to do something a little more tongue-in-cheek, like kind of say, yeah, we know who Shaft is, but we're still awesome, you know?
Right.
I think they did a great job with it.
I'll agree.
Buster
I think
Rhymes
they did.
In this one.
Buster Rhymes was not in this one. He sat that one out.
That was a different one. But another one I would do want to throw out and recommend is the new Superfly about 3-4 years ago came out. That was pretty fantastic.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
I was blown away by it. I was not expecting anything from it and got a fantastic movie and a really good story and just well done all around. So definitely check out the new Superfly.
I will.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
Well worth
it. Is it better than Superfly TNT? Is my question.
Slightly. Only slightly. I mean, just minuscule.
Well, you know, guys, we are we're getting towards the end and we wanted to give you a chance and we want to talk about your podcast and really, you know, get everybody kind of aware of what you're doing. Can you tell us about some previous episodes and what you talked about and what you maybe have going on in the future?
I mean, like we said earlier, we've got the Friday the 13th Megapod. It was like 2.5 hours.
Amazing.
Can't wait to listen to that.
Our episodes are usually not that long. So prepare yourself. Do some stretches or something. I don't know. We did The Ring before that. We've got Myst next week. We've got all sorts of cool stuff coming up. We got Warlock coming up the week after that. Ooh.
Yes. R.I.P. You know, Julian Sands, man. Yeah. He's still
alive. Julian Sands all day. Yes.
Well, not all day anymore.
Not anymore. I don't.
In my heart.
He is the warlock. That's fine. If he comes back after this.
Hey, good point. Between him and Christopher Walken and Prophecy, maybe they should fight.
How would it be ironic? Like, and I don't mean to pick on him or anything like that, but would it be ironic if he was bit by a spider?
Zing. It would be.
Yes, a remake in Arachnophobia. Let's see where it goes.
Life imitating art. Yes.
Right.
We embrace the absurdity here.
like I said, we do horror. We do science fiction. The goal is to be kind of funny. You know, that's our goal. Cross your fingers.
It's hard when they're too good. You know what I mean? It's hard because it doesn't. Then you're just praising it, and like The Ring did not get as great a rating as we thought. It was very surprising, but we didn't have much to say about it critically. Now, Train House, to Busan,
we recorded could,
Trains to Busan. That was amazing. I think we are going to have to watch the remake and cut that shit to shreds. You know that's going to be terrible.
I love it.
It's going to be fucking Brad Pitt at like 56 years old doing karate or something. Yeah.
Fuck yes, something outrageous where he's going to use a Perrier bottle in defense of himself.
They redo Bullet Train and they just throw in two zombies.
Right? Let's just pretend at that point.
Give me Vinnie Jones and it might be better. Just have him headbutt someone and call him a wanker and I'll be fine.
That sounds, I'd sign up for that.
So with you guys having different tastes in movies and horror sci-fi, it seems, how do you go about picking for each episode? Is it, you know, do you guys switch on and off or?
Switch back and forth.
Nice. Very cool.
Well, we open it up. We ask for suggestions, and if
sometimes we're lazy, we can't think of anything. They're like, "Hey, but so and so said we should do this." Okay, that's how we heard about Train to Busan. I'd never heard of it before. I had heard of it.
So what's one that you might be looking forward to in the future that you haven't seen? Either of you?
Ooh, haven't seen.
Ironically, there is a Japanese movie also called House that people have been recommending to me. That it's from like 1978 or something, which I have not seen yet, but I'm adding it to the list.
And I want to see Ringu. I haven't seen the original Ring.
Yes. Oh, the
Japanese ghosts are nothing to fuck around with, man.
No, seriously.
That's bad shit.
Oh, that shit affects your brain and then just lives there. And you wake up in the morning like, is that a ghost? Every time.
It's real.
It's
Ringu's gonna fuck in. You'll have a hoot.
If I could give an idea, if that's okay. Please. I think you guys should do like a New York, a horror movies that are from New York, like a setting, like
mean
a
streets.
No, like a horror movie. So it would be like
Mean Street.
Where's the Chud? Is that Toronto? Chud? Supposed to be New York.
Yeah, that's New York.
Yes. I think Q is in Chicago. I think, isn't it?
No, Q is in New York City. Q's in New York City. Yeah. Vampire's Kiss. You could do
King Kong.
Vampire in Brooklyn
is another one. I would love to see like what you guys take on it. You should check out the John Travolta movie Blowout too,
or The Secret of My Success.
We did Blowout.
You did Blowout. Awesome. Yes.
Overrated.
I'm surprised it was rated.
Very true. No, people love
I think Blowout. We watched some like documentary on horror movies. And then I was up in Seattle and they had at their pop culture museum, they have this whole horror movie top, 100 or something. So I was like writing them down. I'm like, and then we're going to do this one. And then we're going to do this one. We need to do more Argento.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I don't think it was Argento, but it was Cemetery Man. That would be a fun one for you guys to do.
I haven't seen that. Rupert Everett.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Demons.
Based upon the Italian comic book, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure about the comic book. But
I believe you are correct, sir. Yeah.
What's it called?
Cemetery Man.
Oh, okay. All right. That's on the list.
That was long before my best friend's wedding.
Yeah, oh, long before. And also the proper spelling of cemetery, unlike pet cemetery.
Right. That is true. It has that going for it.
So
which
what
will bother me to the end of time.
I want to ask, what elements of horror do you guys like most, or what are you turned off by?
Oh, I like ghosts, and I don't like slasher porn. I don't like that.
Yeah,
I had a hot take on Twitter earlier this week where I said not a fan of Rob Zombie or Eli Roth.
No,
boom! People are coming for me. I gotta say,
how come not Eli Roth or Rob Zombie? Is it just too intense, or?
Well, ideally for me, I want it to be fun. Now, scary can be fun. I'm not against scary. I just find sometimes it's too joylessly violent, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I can watch Jason do his thing all the live long day.
We can watch Tarantino with buckets of blood just bathing every surface. But some of this other stuff is... it's
Hostel,
not as fun. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Saw. I saw Saw in the theater once, and I'm like, I can't watch any more of these. It was too upsetting. And
I saw
movies.
Saw it. It was fine, but I was not going to see another one.
Yeah. The idea of making it so real can be hard when it's like they want to put you in that moment leading up to the moment that then the moment happens and you watch the whole moment. That's too much. Like, you got to give us a break. You got to cut to the person's face and let them scream, and then you see the magical finger fly off. That's different.
Right.
But, like, Hostel went in there and was like, we're going to make you feel it, and then we're going to make you watch it. Now you're going to experience it afterwards, too. And it wasn't
for weeks.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then Fulci's films, like Zombie, where they're reaching inside the cavity and pulling out real animal organs, and they're just chomping away.
Yeah,
I don't mind that, actually.
Makes me hungry. I don't know.
Look, I have
chop
I
up
have
some onions
well.
With that. It's all good.
Oh, anyone else want a bratwurst? I don't know.
Spaghetti, right, with meat sauce. I don't mind Fulci. I mean, there's definitely moments you're like, the eyeball. But maybe it's so realistic. Like, the technology today allows it to just appear a little too close for comfort that it's just.
Yeah. I want to
know whatever floats your boat. You know what I mean? Whatever people are into, cool. You know, go with it. Just not my cup of tea.
Sure. Unless it's Eli Roth or Rob
Zombie. I mean, I'm always looking at what Eli Roth is doing because I think eventually he's going to settle himself. Rob Zombie, I have no interest whatsoever. And I know people fucking love him.
Oh, yeah. No, but that's the thing is I know a lot of people who love a lot of stuff that I don't like.
Yeah.
Like Argento. Like, I understand you want to respect the OGs. I get it, and I'll respect him, but I don't want to watch it. Like, I got other stuff to do. I got better things to do with my time.
Kevin and I went to Fangoria because what's her name? What's her name, Kevin?
Karen Black.
Karen Black was going to be there with Rob Zombie, and we didn't care about Rob Zombie. We just came to see Karen Black, and it was just when House of a Thousand Corpses was coming out, so we really didn't know Rob Zombie beyond a musician. But the lines for them was so long that we just said deuces.
Yeah.
Fair.
And thought, poor Karen Black.
Trapped there the whole time.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back to the whole, like, I love Boris Karloff. Huge
hell
fan.
Yeah.
Huge fan. But it doesn't mean if I'm in the mood for horror, I don't want to watch that. Yeah. You know, like, there's other things that are out there that I've seen those enough. So
those are the ones I like to put on around Halloween.
Agreed. Yeah. Yes. The OG, like the MGM, the Universal Monsters.
Yeah, absolutely. The love the Universal Monsters.
Mick got me back into it.
Or Hammer.
Christopher Lee's vampire.
Love Hammer.
This is Dracula. Yes. Oh,
for sure.
That's good stuff.
With that actually being said, the new Dracula film Renfield is coming out. So Nicolas Cage playing Dracula and Nicholas Holt playing Renfield.
This is the right reaction.
Weirdly enough,
how can you not go see it? It sounds like a train wreck. Absolutely.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, I was going to say he looks like John Travolta in the movie in his makeup. So you got a face off reaction. I'm telling you, go watch the trailer and you'll see.
It's weird.
You know, I want to thank you guys so much for jumping on. We're getting ready to start signing off soon, but we had a great talk with you. It was great to talk music and just horror in general. We love it. Yeah, guys, everybody go check out the podcast That Wouldn't Die. All of the links are in the link tree down below in the description. But tell us again, where else can they find your podcast, on what platforms and stuff like that?
We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're releasing videos on TikTok and Instagram. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and where the finer podcasts are available.
And Kevin is now recording us to put us back on YouTube. We used to be only on YouTube back in the old B Movie Club days, but now we're making our triumphant return to YouTube again. That's
awesome. That is all. Awesome. Look out fans. For you. So, guys, make sure to go follow, listen, and subscribe to their YouTube once it's back up and running. Thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you so much, Aaron. We really appreciate you being
absolutely.
On the show.
This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Dynamite, absolutely. Guys. Thank you.
This was good. Appreciate we'll y'all. You thank soon. You. And we will definitely check you all out. Be well.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye bye.
All right. So that, guys, you gotta go check out that podcast. I listen to their Big Trouble in Little China. Episode.
Oh, very important, because China. I mean, that's our tent pole. That's pretty much if you don't like that, I don't know how you're gonna make it on our podcast.
Like if you just want to be friends with us, you have to just give us a sign and we know what's up. But that is awesome. And guys, like we said, the links are down below in the description. Make sure you go over, click over, and follow them and more. Okay.
Yeah, check them out, because we love growing friendships and we love hanging out, and that's the whole point of podcasting with other humans. Is to interconnect with other humans, and they are fantastic humans. So that was
cool. We sell the shirt. What's the strongest ship in the fleet? Friendship.
It's that. I went the wrong way again. That's I'm 0 for 2 tonight.
You did go. Goodness. You did that during Frakes interview too.
So I did too. I've got like a serious Chuck Knobloch. Like just my throat of first strong yips right now. Strong yips.
Chuck Knobloch, you shut your mouth.
Hey, he was a great Minnesota Twin, but you remember when he got the yips? We all saw it.
I do remember.
It's a whole season.
So, guys, you know, before we get started, Casey, I want to talk to you. There's a news thing that I wanted to kind of touch down on you with, and that is, did you hear about The Rock and DC and Shazam movie and everything recently?
Wait, no, not recently. Nothing new.
So basically, it comes out. The Wrap had an article today where they talked to an insider within DC. Or Warner Brothers, rather, and they kind of anonymity. They didn't really let anything go, but it has been said that there's The Rock's meddling and trying to push himself towards the center. And this is basically what I'm just telling you what I was reading.
Yeah,
push himself towards the center and make Black Adam sort of the center of DC.
Right.
He had a lot of say in that movie. And right. A lot of clout to do it, and it kind of screwed it up, because the way it was supposed to be is when you watch Black Adam, he fights the Justice Society, and at the end he's flying and he gets stopped by Amanda Waller, and he's told, you know, we're gonna have to send our big guns after you. And then out of the dust walks Superman, Henry Cavill Superman.
Okay,
so as I tell people, so when you're going forward with it, that doesn't really make sense when you have a Shazam character and you know those are the two that kind of go against each other. Mm-hmm. And it came to fruition that what it was The Rock shut it down. He said he doesn't want anybody from the Justice Society that is in his movie in Shazam 2. And he does, and it was supposed to be Zachary Levi's Shazam who shows up at the end. And it was, and The Rock came right out and said, like, you know, to them, supposedly, again, I'm going all by the insider information in the article. Rock basically nixed that and said, no, I don't want Zachary Levi in my movie, and we're not doing any cameos in his movie. And that disjointed feel kind of plays into, I think when you watch it, it kind of plays into that.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch Shazam 2, I really liked it. I thought it was a great movie, and I'm sorry to see that's not doing well.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, I did say in the beginning, I was like, I wonder if this is going to do well, because do people really care if it's going away? But also now to hear that The Rock may have kind of screwed it over is pretty rough.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. When we get in this upper echelon of people, WB needs to be able to handle their business better, and they clearly haven't for a long time. So allowing actors and creators to run roughshod over the studio idea or whatever the purpose-built thing is that they're moving towards, which DC has always tried to build towards that, WB Studios has always tried to take the DC properties and build them towards actually creating a franchise that can rival Marvel.
Yeah.
And considering they have the older properties, the, in my opinion, in some ways better properties, if nothing else, you can do 50 Batman movies and never hit the same villain and still have some incredible stories. So they have better options. You still have Justice League and Wonder Woman. You have some just incredible avenues you could go, and they still continue to fail because they give too much credence and creativity to the populace, to the popular, to whomever is on the up and up and whoever's on the upswing. So they gave Snyder all that power, and then they fought him because they gave him all that power, and they screwed up their own franchise.
Yeah.
Then you get into The Rock and allowing one person to change the fundamental core of a character who is literally Shazam's foil and say, I don't want him to interact with Shazam, then you're off the job, bud, because you're taking away from what we as the fan servants want.
Yeah. And so, it just goes to show you that like an actor to step in like that and take on this role, and he had been amping up for years before they even shot. Mm-hmm. And that's great and all, but, and he was of course a huge star and he still is, but you know, like to do that shows that you are not making this for the fans, and why should we trust you with your movie? You know,
I don't trust him with his movies. I don't trust him with any movies. The guy's a great brandist. He's able to go out there and make his money and do what he's going to do. And people are falling in love and fall in line and buy his shit.
Yeah.
Great. Congratulations. I'm not one of them. I've started to push back against The Rock a lot, you know, like as much as I love him, I do. I love the caricature. I love the character he plays. I love the fact that he's going out there and he is a self-made man doing all of this work. It's fantastic. I do not take anything away from him.
Yeah.
But I don't care about his IPs because he doesn't care about my IPs. And that's it.
All right. You know what? I can't. Great way to put it. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But I think you had a movie for me to fix this week, sir.
Oh, my goodness, sir. Do I ever. So I was back and forth on this one, and it took me a minute to get here. In fact, I shot a few ideas to you, but this one has hung around for me for a minute. This one was actually one I wanted to bring up originally in the beginning, but I thought, maybe we don't play on this. But I'm really curious because one of my fondest memories of this movie is actually the bowel issues I had of the popcorn because I ate too much popcorn and drank too much soda. That's the fondest memory I have of Ang Lee's The Hulk starring Eric Bana. Oh, so I'm curious, McManhattan, can you fix The Hulk?
Well, yeah. I mean, because it's like starting in a basement and then you just, but and all you have is a ladder and some material. You're going to work your way up. You know, it's just the way it is. So it's so bottom of the barrel. You know, if you're going to fix it, especially at that time, you had the Fantastic Four movie doing pretty well. You had the Spider-Man movies doing pretty well. Because at 2004, I think that was around the time before Spider-Man had just come out.
That Spider-Man was, 3, yeah, rather. Right. Yeah, Spider-Man. Movie. So Spider-Man 2 was still strong. We still had a good Doc Ock. We had, you know, good love story going on. Things were good there.
And the Fantastic Four was,
was fine. Yeah. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
But so now you have the Hulk. And the reason that I think this really doesn't work is because they, first off, they made it too colorful. And not saying that it has to be dark or crazy, but you're dealing with anger and you can't just have everything so super bright. I maybe would have, I want to say that it was the,
happy anger movie?
The time of why the Hulk looked the way he did, but I was only like 4 or 5 years later that they actually did the Incredible Hulk and he actually looked pretty good.
Amazing.
So I don't know that it was the, and plus we had Jurassic Park in 1993, so it really wasn't the VFX at the time, is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. But you do need to spend a little more time on VFX. Now, if you talk the technical side of that, I don't know what went into that, but if we're talking story, which is usually what I go with to fix it, I'm going to keep, of course, the true to form. His father was an abusive alcoholic, and that's where his rage festers from, because Bruce Banner is such a great character. When people really look down and look at it and think about it, he is the perfect iteration of what burying your anger is, to the point where it becomes literally an uncontrollable green monster. Like, and I always like when they touch down on things like in the original series and stuff like that, people who don't know, they often say, well, I don't understand, why was he so angry to turn into a monster? Why did the radiation turn him so angry? That's not it. He had so much anger buried inside of him. This is what the gamma radiation had created for him. That's what I love about the Marvel movies and kind of how they've been doing it, where it's the mad scientist portion of it. Mm-hmm. And for his father to be testing on him for so many years that once it was sparked, like, of course you're going to keep all of those things. I would actually change out almost every actor except for Jennifer Connelly, maybe Sam Elliott, but he was not better than William Hurt in the role. But with the right director and the right story, I think Sam Elliott could pull it off pretty good.
So where in Ang Lee's storytelling do you think someone else could fit in 2004 for a director? Ang Lee came in really bright and really over the top, and really curious timeline switch-ups there. Who do you think fills that hole better at that point?
Well, you mean as a director?
Yes.
Yeah, Ang Lee is just coming off Brokeback Mountain. That's why he's getting that. For some reason, big popcorn budget movies, the blockbusters, when a director wins the Best Director Award at the Academy Awards, they're like, you know what? That really intense drama that they made would be a great Marvel movie. And it's like, you know, Zoe Chow who took over for Eternals. And it's like,
yep.
I'm like, she made it her tone, which is a great tone for, certain movies, but I just didn't feel it worked for Eternals. And I don't think I'm the only one in that bracket. So going back to Hulk and Ang Lee taking over, I think he tried, and I don't think he's a bad director by any means. He can make a great movie, but they missed the mark on this, and I don't know where there was interference from the producing team, the studio. Marvel Studios didn't exist at the time, but I think that was Universal who had made it, if I'm correct.
Are you correct?
Nice. So when they make that, so who stepped in and who stepped on toes? Because you have a dramatic actor, and you have this story that ultimately boils down to an abusive father testing on his son, and then this anger comes out of him. How you can't play that when you have a dramatic movie like Brokeback Mountain, a year or so before, and take that and kind of like really turn this into something where you not only have a mad scientist element, almost like a Frankenstein sort of element, if it makes sense. Now, I know that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is more the analogy that people use, and that's what it was created off of. If you take this, like this man who was just a mean, angry, abusive person, has a baby for the sole purpose of testing on him. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he's that obsessed. Now, the wife didn't know and all that stuff, and he ends up killing her and such.
Which is always a good time. What a jovial ride, huh? No, right? Who doesn't love this story so far?
But they tried to do that in this movie. They tried to make it jovial, and that's where you keep your darkness. You tell this dark story. Bruce Banner is now this, and then you break off. He's in it. Now, you tell that story in like the first like 15, 20 minutes, and it's really dark. And now we have Bruce Banner, who is a genius. Like, he just knows, they didn't touch down on that either, about how smart Bruce Banner actually is. I would say that to me, the Marvel movies now, like Incredible Hulk and where he showed up, they don't do a great job with that either. Mark Ruffalo does the best.
They do better.
You're right.
But they don't. Scientist. Yeah, he's not quite the Mark Wahlberg. Hey, I'm doing science over here. But, you know, he reaches a new level. Now, I do have a question for you as far as the big fight scene. Because the big fight scene in this one, if you remember, was against the wolves.
Wolves?
So I'm wondering, wolves? Would there be wolves?
Weren't they poodles, if I remember correctly?
Okay, so they were big dogs. So,
gamma radiation poodles?
Would you have a different fight occur there? Do you think that would have been better? Or do you think, so do you add a supervillain? Do you add some sort of different creature and stay in the creature vein? Or do you just make the army fight that much more bigger?
Well, the thing is, I would kill off the father. Off the father, he dies. So the anger's still there. The anger always remains because he found his father's notes. He's discovering, but like I said, set it again. Like after you see that his childhood and what he went through, then finally he's in college. He meets Betty. Yeah.
And he never gets the closure. Then I like
that. Yeah, he never gets the closure. He finds out his father dies. You know, they're in the middle of sort of going through their test trial runs and such. They do the gamma radiation. He's hit with it. And I would not spark it quickly. You need to get something like, yes, I understand that the Hulk comes on whenever he gets angry. And I know that feeling. But if you just play it along, like it just needs to be sparked first and he's not angry enough because he's in a relationship, things are going pretty well. They don't know about it yet. You cut back to, and also I would have made it, I would have taken away like the TV show element and stuff like that, where it was a machine, and I would have done like the experimenting, like they're experimenting on bombs and stuff. And he went to save somebody and he got hit. Because then what that adds is you can either make that person he saves a villain for the role, or of course you can, I think his name is Danny. I can't remember his like sort of sidekick's name that becomes like a blue Hulk or something like that. It was so like convoluted in a lot of ways,
right? Yeah.
Different mediums. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gets hit. So for this sake, to tell a dark tale, I would make it Ross get he saves Ross from getting hit.
Okay.
And they both get it, but he's the only one that shows up. Now we know, then we find out that Ross's anger
Red Hulk
is later. More controlled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, then you add that at the time, I don't know if the Red Hulk had existed yet. If he did, then you could do Red Hulk.
2004, I'm pretty sure Red Hulk was like the 90s.
Yeah, maybe. I don't 100% remember, but like you could make him a writer. You could do something different if he didn't exist at that point. Mm-hmm. But that's your villain right there.
Yeah.
That you can build off of. And you
better
can,
than the Hulk personal villain, right?
Well, no. That's your villain because you got to have Hulk fighting somebody like you did Abomination. Yeah. And I wouldn't introduce Abomination yet. I'd keep that as a test. But he's going to fight Ross in it. And he tried to save him. And let's say they're buddy-buddy, like, you know, he likes him. But once Ross turns into this this beast and he realizes it and he's, like, cool with it and he can control it, you would have a Bruce Banner who can't control it because he doesn't deal with his emotions. He doesn't know how to, like, stamp them down and, like, work through them and, like, think and strategically plan like, you know, a general would. So
right, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
So what sets him off, what sets Bruce Banner off is like after he gets hit, it's not sparked yet. Mm-hmm. And because nobody knows that he was being tested on, and that's the adverse reaction that really caused the Hulk. Mm-hmm. So he's and I would hint at it like when the fire is there and you're just like, how are they not dead? Like, you know, like after the bomb is dropped or whatever, however they do it and whatever weapon they test. You see like a silhouette of both of them in their forms.
Okay.
All right. Fire. Okay. And then like when they cut back to it, they're just clothes burnt and just kind of doing their thing and they're normal. So his father dies while he's doing his testing right after. He goes to clear out his stuff, finds his experimental notes on him and everything else. And that he was just the whole part of a bigger plan to create this beast, and that's what would pull into him finally raging out as the Hulk, going crazy because now the anger, it's first sparked. He doesn't have any control over it at all. He's not right in his head, kind of like how She-Hulk was when she first turned.
Yes, the way she should. Yes, like the way the Hulk you think the Hulk would be. Yeah,
like it takes time. You have to train your brain to like kind of like get into it. And that would be,
and for her, she doesn't have the voice. That's the other thing about Banner, is getting the fact that there is a voice there that is screaming the most hurtful, angry, brutal, vicious, massive, monstrous, absurd things. And that's what just takes over this incredibly intelligent mind. And I love it. Yes.
And it does, because it's the protection of that mind. It's a protection of the Hulk comes out. It's his anger sees him as the little boy who was abused and the little boy who was tested on and all that stuff. So now he breaks out. He goes on a tear. Ross knows who he is. So Ross is like, I'm going to hunt this guy.
Yes.
You know, because like, I got to take him out because I know what he is. And he can't control it. And now that becomes your battle. And then by the end of it, he is controlling it more and more. And Ross is like, you can go, but I am watching. And like, you set that up for sequels and what else he can do. And then maybe Ross walks away and he's going into a testing facility with like a number of like soldiers to be tested.
Okay. Yes.
They're calling it like the Abomination Project or something.
Right. The Abominable Project. So, all right. Here's what I love about this so much. Is we took Ang Lee's The Hulk. That's what I presented you with. That was the challenge, was to make that better. And my friend.
Did I fix it?
You managed to create The Incredible Hulk by Edward Norton. The movie done a few years later. We essentially just recreated that movie. And yes, you fixed it.
I don't think I was a recreation. I think I went a little in depth on like the
No, you went very in depth. No, I'm just playing with you. That was a bad joke. It was a bad joke. Well,
No, I'm kidding with you, bud. But I'm glad you gave it to me, because it was one to really think about, and kind of what elements I'd like to see from the Hulk. That they do well in the new Marvel movies, but like I said, there's some things that I just kind of wish they would touch down on a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But agreed. Whatever.
And that was one of the things that I think Ang Lee really did very well, was at least open up the different door of a story that did exist in Marvel. He didn't go off the rails here. This is a straight up Marvel story that he pulled from the comic books themselves. Yeah. And people were angry about this. And unfortunately, I believe, like you said, a lot of the CGI hadn't caught up, maybe not the best casting, and also not always the best choices, kind of struggled with the giant poodles. So there were a few spots here that could have used a lot of love, but I think you, Mick, with what you came up with, you definitely fixed this movie. So I appreciate what you did with this one, and I think it's a much better flick. Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. And guys, let us know what you think. Sound off in the comments. Of course, we cut the Did I Fix into a video you can watch on our YouTube, or you can watch it as part of this show, the Scene Stumps podcast, or you listen to it when you listen to the show. We are going to take off for the night. We appreciate you guys watching and listening and being a part of it. Make sure to join the Snob Nation. Be a part of it, because we have a great community of people being just here and enjoying it. But Casey, my friend, it's that time. Take it away,
my friend. I appreciate it as always, and thank you all for listening, whatever time it may be. Good night, good evening, good morning, good afternoon. I hope that we were able to bring a little bit of joy into your life, made you smile, made you laugh, maybe made you fart in public and got uncomfortable with other people around you. Whatever it was, I hope no matter what, from this point forward, you have a better day. So I appreciate you. And remember, be kind to yourself and be kind to each other.
And guys, I just want to say, we got a lot of shows going on, a lot of special events. Go check out our big announcement video that just went up at 8:00. And Casey couldn't put it better myself. So I'm just going to say goodnight, everybody.
Hey guys, Mick here. Thanks so much for watching the show and supporting us. We appreciate it. We appreciate you coming back and joining in the comments. But guys, I really want to thank you, our patrons who are out here supporting us, helping us keep the lights on. Really, truly appreciate you. Tim, Paul, Stacy, Matt, Aaron, AJ, George G3, Chris S, Dale, Chris H, Dan, John B, Ron, Jason, and John W. Thank you guys so much for all your support. Guys, we have 3 tiers available right now. As of March 1st, we're adding 2 more tiers for a total of 5 with tons of perks. So go check out patreon.com/thescenesnobs. And join our Snob Nation Discord channel where the moderators are keeping everything going and we're having really fun conversations over there and more. So go check it out. It's free to join and just be part of the Snob Nation. And remember to embrace the absurdity. Hit subscribe on our YouTube channel. We have tons of great shows coming out and more. Our lives are over on Patreon, but you can check out the Snob Nation Morning Drive live show on our YouTube channel Friday, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, and tons more shows coming up thereafter. We have great shows like the Scene Snobs podcast, Betting Bros, Math vs. Smash, Real Combat, movie reviews, and tons more. We have fun over there, and we think you will too. If you're looking for great merch, go over to the snobsmerch.com store. Use promo code SNOBS for 10% off of your order. We have tons of shirts, mugs, everything, stickers, all different types of designs. We love it, think you will too. So go check it out and let us know what you think. Remember to follow us on all social media platforms. We are at The Scene Snobs everywhere. You can also follow Casey at Plotos21 on Instagram, at Casey the Madman on TikTok, and at Twitter Night on Twitter. Guys, tons of fun stuff and new things coming out every day, so go check out our content there. Thank you guys again. We are The Scene Snobs. Embrace the absurdity with us, and we love you, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody.